Disclaimer: this episode contains topics that some viewers may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. We do not support underage drinking, excessive drinking, binge drinking, or any other unsafe drinking behavior. Please drink responsibly, never drink and drive. Welcome to the Conundrum Bar. Join us every Friday for a new conundrum from murder, mystery, to supernatural occurrences. And as you may know, I'm Lianza.
I'm Raquel.
I'm Thania.
And I'll turn you over to Raquel so she can make our good drinks.
That was offensive. So pull up a stool and we'll make Nala's drink of the week. It is called Electric Grenade. So this drink is actually kind of a conundrum, and we'd like one of our listeners to try to figure it out. It's a play on words type of thing. If you guys can figure it out, let us know. Whoever gives us the right answer first, we'll get a custom-made conundrum bar glass.
Unless it's Daniel.
So you don't get it, Daniel.
So we will start with a tropical vodka blend. So it'll be half of this, half of lemonade, then you top it with a pomegranate schnapps. And you can always play with your measurements to see how you like it. Some people like it kind of more sour and others don't. So make it how you like it. And you kind of want to pour it a little slow. Like that. There we go. Got it to work.
That looks bloody. Is this episode going to be bloody?
No. we're trying to tone it down for the last couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. We've been a little intense with the last few episodes, so.
Yeah, they kind of messed me up.
And so then you'll add your cherry grenades on top.
The cherry is the best part, guys.
And there you have it, the electric grenade.
All right. So today, our story starts with your typical teenager going to a party. On February 24, 2004, 17-year-old Brianna Alexandria Maitland had gone to a party and some drama ensued. A friend of hers, Kelly LaCrosse, thought that Brianna was flirting with her boyfriend. I told you, we're starting with the typical teenage party here.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever been to one of those.
But. Me either. We're not considered typical. Brianna, of course, denied this, and she even tried to make the situation better by getting her own boyfriend and leaving the party. Like, she was like, okay, you know what, I don't want anything to do with this, like, we're just gonna leave.
They were already boyfriend and girlfriend?
Yes.
Or she just, like, decided to, you're my boyfriend.
Yeah.
No, that was her then boyfriend, yeah.
Oh my god, I was like, dang, she must have been
in. No, that was her then boyfriend. Kelly had different plans. Kelly followed Brianna outside and proceeded to attack her. Like, Brianna, because she was, like, such a loyal friend, did not fight back at all. Which, I'm sorry, but all three of us love each other, and we'd all... Yeah, not that's not happening.
If you came at me, I would come right back out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would not end well. So that's not happening. We're not going to fight.
You'd be like, catch me outside. How about that?
So anyways, she didn't fight back. She didn't want to lose that friendship with Kelly. Although,
I have a thought, though. Like, maybe she did do something. She felt guilty. Let her beat her up. This is just like, because... That's, like, weird for someone to let someone beat them up for no reason. Like,
and not do nothing and not try to run away or anything.
Do we have physical descriptions on the girls? Like, was she tall or short?
I don't know what Kelly looked like, but I will show you Brianna.
So I feel like maybe she just felt like she couldn't fight back, or maybe, you know.
This is Brianna. So, I don't know if I got how tall she was. Let me see.
Maybe Kelly was just insecure.
So that was Brianna. At that time, she was between 5'3 and 5'5 and weighed between 105 and 118 pounds. So she was a small girl. Yeah. I don't know what Kelly looked like, but yeah, it's possible that she was just like, hell no, I can't do this. We're just going to take it. But anyways, the next day, another friend of Brianna's convinced her to go to the hospital. They treated her for cuts, two black eyes, a broken nose, and a concussion.
She didn't want to go to the doctor at all?
Yeah, she beat the crap out of her.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, also crazy because, like, Brianna didn't want to fight back because of their friendship, but Kelly had, she beat. So yeah, in the days that followed after that, Brianna filed a criminal complaint against Kelly, so she pressed charges. In the next few weeks, Brianna continued to work her two jobs. So she worked two jobs. She worked as a dishwasher at the Black Lantern Inn and a waitress at KJ's Diner in St. Albans, Vermont. By the way, this is in Vermont, guys. She had previously jumped around from house to house, staying with friends, until she finally found a steady-ish place to live with her childhood friend, Jillian, in Sheldon, Vermont.
I have a question. How old is she?
She's 17.
And she doesn't have no parents or anything? She's...
So that's the thing. In October of the year before, of 2003, so just a few months before, Brianna decided that she no longer wanted to be on the family farm. Her family owned a farm, and she wanted to be closer to her friends, who at that time were about 15 miles away in a different school in a different city. So she didn't want to live at home anymore. She enrolled in her friend's high school and left home. And it says, although her parents were not happy with her decision, they decided to kind of like tolerate the situation. So they were not happy, but they were like, okay, they're probably going to leave anyway, so we might as well support you. So that's how that happened. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Sure thing. So in February, that same February of 2004, Brianna had dropped out of school, but she continued to study to get her GED. She started independent study. On March 19th, 2004, Brianna went and took her GED test. Afterwards, her and her mom, also named Kelly, I'll try to keep it kind of straight, went out to celebrate. So they went out to eat lunch, and then they went and did some shopping, and Kelly even remembers Brianna discussing plans with her about going to college. She wanted to go to college. While waiting in line at one of the stores, something caught Brianna's attention. And she told her mother that she had to run out for a little bit, that she would meet right back up with her. So after paying and leaving the store, Kelly met up with Brianna in the parking lot. And Kelly recalls very specifically that Brianna looked visibly shaken, but she didn't want to pry. So she didn't really ask her, like, what happened, like, who she met, like, anything. So right after that, Brianna told her that she had to go home and get ready for work.
And she just cut it, like, that's it, I gotta go. So
Kelly drove Brianna home and dropped her off at Jillian's house, which is where she was staying, sometime between 3:30 p.m. and 4 o'clock p.m. Brianna got ready for work, and she left a note for Jillian saying that she was leaving for work. Co-workers say that the shift was uneventful. She didn't make or receive any calls. She didn't have any visitors. When the shift was over, they asked if she'd like to go to dinner with them, but she declined, saying that she was tired and she had a morning shift at her other job in the morning, so she just wanted to go home and rest. So Jillian, who she was staying with, had been visiting family that weekend and didn't see the note until Monday. When she hadn't seen Brianna, Jillian just kind of assumed that she had gone back home to live with her parents.
But what I don't understand, if she left a note that she's going to work, you think she would have left a note that she went back to live with her parents?
You would think. Anyways, she just assumed that she had gone back home to live with her parents in East Franklin, Vermont. Finally, on March 23rd, 3 days later, Jillian called Brianna's parents to check on her. It was then that they finally all realized that she was missing.
That was going to be my question. I was going to be like, does she have a phone? She couldn't have called her that day just to make sure, check on her?
Like, hey, I just got back from visiting family, just wanted to make sure, like, at least that's what we would do. But yeah, 3 days later, she finally contacted her parents, and they all consecutively realized at the same time that no one had seen Brianna for 3 days.
We definitely wouldn't be able to successfully just disappear like that.
That's because we all see each other all the time.
We're all very nosy in each other's lives. I like it.
We even have an app to track each other.
Yeah, we do. And if not, our family is big enough that we're all like, have you seen them? Have you seen them? Have you talked to them? So going back a few days, at 11:20 on March 19th, when Brianna went to work, co-workers recall Brianna getting into her car, which was a pale green 1985 Oldsmobile, which you can't really, like, mistake. They remember her leaving the parking lot of the Black Lantern, and that's the last time they saw her.
And this was after she had met up with her mom for that day?
Yes, this was after her shift already, like,
planning the same day that she left her mom. It was like after the work.
Yeah. Did they check at the place she was supposed to work the next morning?
Not that I know of. Okay. Not that I know of. But here's the thing. The following day, after the 19th, after her shift at work, after her coworkers saw her, on March 20th, a state trooper was dispatched to an abandoned barn in Richford, which was locally called, quote, the Old Dutch Burn House, unquote.
So if he was dispatched there, someone called it in.
Someone called it in. So what they were dispatched there for is that about a mile east of Montgomery, they found a pale green Oldsmobile backed into the barn, which had caused minor damage to the rear bumper. So the car was backed into the barn. The car had made a hole in the barn, and it had even caused a piece of plywood that was kind of like a patchwork to fall onto the trunk. There were no indicators that the car had ended up there as in kind of like an uncontrollable manner. So it was not like there was an accident, she spun out, like she lost control, ended up in the barn. Mm-hmm. There was no indication of that. Let me show you the car and the barn.
I don't have no thoughts on that. Like, I'm like, was she trying to get away from someone? So she, I don't know.
It's kind of a weird, like,
yeah,
position, right?
Definitely not, like, maybe accidental to go into the bar, but why would you just leave it there? I don't know.
Yeah, like, okay, you maybe were trying to turn around or something. It was dark. You didn't see the bar and backed into it a little bit, but why is the car there? It's not just like, oh, I backed my car and I'm going to leave it there. So, after this, as they're investigating, they find that the rear wheels had been raised off the ground, causing the car to become disabled. So, the rear wheels weren't touching the ground. It couldn't get any traction.
Oh, so maybe she backed up to leave and it just kept spinning. So, she jumped out of the car and ran from whoever was chasing her?
We shall see.
Okay.
Like, or we shall see.
The car wasn't, like, on jacks or anything? It was just, like, kind of, like, it ran over something?
And yeah.
Like, high-centered it and it couldn't go nowhere?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The keys were missing, but the car itself was unlocked. Inside, police found two uncashed paychecks on the front seat, both of them totaling to about $150. They also found a few other items, including some change, water bottle, medicine, driver's license, makeup, contact lenses, and an unsmoked cigarette. They also found all of her clothes inside the car, and even stranger, there were items strewn around on the ground in front of the car, and a woman's fleece jacket that was determined was not Brianna's, in a field near the car. So just keep all of this in mind.
I don't think that can go out of our minds because it's so oddly specific what they named.
It's weird, right? So police assumed that the car had been abandoned by a drunk driver, and they made arrangements for it to be towed to a local garage. They checked the registration, and it showed that it was registered to a Kelly Maitland, Brianna's mother. But they didn't notify her because the paychecks indicated that the primary driver was Brianna Maitland. So instead, they went to the Black Lantern Inn to inform Brianna, but unfortunately, it was closed, so they couldn't find her. 3 days later, when they finally connected, when everyone finally realized that Brianna's missing, they go to file a missing persons report, and that's when they finally connect the car with her. So after that, they start publicizing her disappearance. There were witnesses that came forward stating that they had seen her car at the barn as early as the same night she disappeared. So somewhere between March 19th and March 20th, which March 19th was when she left her job, a man driving by the barn sometime between 11:30 p.m. and 12:30 a.m. saw the car parked next to the barn. He said the headlights may have been turned on, but he didn't see anyone in or around the car. Another man driving by between 12 and 12:30 a.m. remembered the blinker being on. On March 20th, on his way back from a party in Canada, because apparently you can just like cross the border real quick to go to a party, one of Brianna's ex-boyfriends actually drove by around 4 a.m. He recognized the car, but he didn't see anyone near it.
He didn't stop to see if maybe she needed help?
No.
I don't know if maybe he like recognized the car, but couldn't remember like who it belonged to. It's just kind of like, that looks familiar.
That's my ex. I'm not going to stop to help.
Or that. Yeah. Could have been that too. So then the next morning, several people actually stopped and took pictures of it because they found it so strange.
Call the police.
One person reported some loose change, a water bottle, and a bracelet or a necklace on the ground outside the car.
So they're just like, we're gonna stop and take a picture of this. Like, that's when we've gone like biking and stuff, and there's like a pickup in the middle of the road, like we're like, okay, maybe they're fine, but when we go out the next day and it's still out there, like,
oh yeah, your mom posted something about it and recorded it.
Yeah, like, what if somebody's missing or hurt or something? Like, that's crazy that they wouldn't. Or someone stalking someone. It's just good to, even if they're like completely nothing wrong, it's good to just like, or if it's just a schedule, at least you know they're okay. Like,
or I mean, like, in this case, it seems like it's a pretty small town because apparently people know the barn. It has a nickname. Mm-hmm. So obviously the car parked backed into the barn is not normal. You would think you'd want to report that, right? So then, on March 25th, 2004, Brianna's parents gave photos of her to the police department. Initially, they didn't believe that there was any foul play since there was no signs indicating.
I was going to say, too, though, I guess I get it if some people didn't report it, because sometimes you think, what if someone else already reported it? It looks like it's been here a while.
That's true.
Yeah. I just was thinking of that now. I was like,
that's kind of true.
But still, save some.
I'm just trying to justify it just in case.
She's being devil's advocate here. So, anyways, initially, police didn't believe that there was any foul play, as there was no signs indicating where the car was found. They believed that it was a runaway case, which how many times have we seen before? Mm-hmm. Every time, almost every time. However, they still did a search. They took police, they did search dogs, they all around the surrounding area where her car was found, but they found nothing. They did note that because everything found inside the car, it appeared as though Brianna had every intention of returning the car. So they didn't believe that she had abandoned it of her own free will.
Those are my thoughts too, because if she was running away or anything, you think she'd take her two checks or and her ID and some of her clothes, like at least to get by.
Yeah. So they didn't think there was any foul play, but they also didn't believe that she abandoned it intentionally. Also, one thing that I want to mention, the charges against Kelly, her friend that attacked her, were pending at the time of all this happening, of the disappearance, and eventually were dropped, even though Brianna's parents tried to object it, because Brianna was missing, they were dropped.
She's still underage, she's not 18 yet, so technically the parents should have full right to continue to pursue.
And also, I don't know, my mind is going to a place where it probably shouldn't already, like, maybe Kelly killed her, but I'm thinking, why would she? Because she's underage too. How much time in jail or punishment would she really get? Like, yeah.
I feel like Kelly got her frustration out on the first night.
Yeah.
I mean, concussion and broken nose.
I'm hoping it's not what I'm thinking, is all I'm thinking.
So then, moving on to March 30th. The Vermont State Crime Lab processes the car. And while they found no signs of a struggle or that anything had happened to Brianna inside of the car, they did find DNA. Keep in mind that little DNA piece. We're going to circle back to it later. So over the years, they've done official searches utilizing divers to search nearby ponds. They've used cadaver dogs to search the woods. And Border Patrol even used their helicopter to cover more area.
Can I just say that this is like case, like all this I'm hearing is like freaking amazing, because we hear of other cases where like the car is like not tampered with, but they take it and they don't even search it. They just like take it somewhere, don't look at it, don't even investigate, and look how much they're looking for her. Like,
I know. I feel like the last couple of cases I've done, like the police have not done what they could have done or even what they procedurally should have done. But this case, like, even though they think she's a runaway, they're being pretty damn thorough.
Yeah, that's good.
So, meanwhile, over the years, Brianna's family conducted their own searches. They followed leads across Vermont, New York, Quebec, and Connecticut. They even went all the way to Boston after a reported sighting of Brianna, but it was a case of mistaken identity. Like, her parents have traveled everywhere looking for her.
That's amazing.
No kidding. A month into the investigation, Brianna's father, Bruce, wrote a letter to the Vermont governor saying that he felt that the search wasn't aggressive enough and that they were being kept in the dark by the police. So even though the police, it does seem like they're doing a lot, seems like there wasn't a lot of communication with the family about what was being done.
Well, in some cases, they say that they don't say, like, specific things just in case someone gives that away to, so they can arrest them.
Yeah.
False confessions and things like that.
So they don't give, like, full details out just in case.
Exactly.
So in May of 2004, which is about 2 months after she's gone missing, her parents teamed up with the parents of Amy Riley, a 20-year-old New Hampshire woman who was murdered in April of the same year, and parents of someone you might have heard of, Maura Murray. Who, Maura Murray, in case you didn't know, had gone missing from New Hampshire in February of 2004. At that time, it was believed that the three cases were connected, and all of the families wanted the FBI to get involved since it had crossed borders.
Sorry, I got chills.
Yay, finally. So, the FBI did meet with local authorities about possible links between the cases. I mean, both women were attractive, brown-haired, both disappeared after car accidents, and left the cars behind with personal items inside. But it was concluded by the FBI that the cases were not connected. And although it hasn't been entirely ruled out, they believe that it's unlikely. Which kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In case you guys don't know the Maura Murray case, Like, it is a huge case that has been covered a ton. So literally just Google Maura Murray and a bunch of stuff will come up.
I'll be Googling
that. She was the one that wrecked between, like, the farm homes and, like, that she had, like, they think that she may have been drinking and driving at the time because they found open containers and things like that, huh?
And several people stopped and talked to her and called the police, and she went missing in the time that someone got to her. Yeah. Listen to this case because you'll definitely see, like, the connections between it and why they totally thought that it's possible that it was connected. So, moving on. February 17, 2006. 2 years after she's gone missing. There was an alleged sighting of Brianna in Atlantic City, New Jersey, at the Caesars World Casino. Surveillance video showed a woman who resembled Brianna with a bald man at a poker table. And although the woman has never been identified, Kelly, Brianna's mom, believes there is a strong resemblance. Which, to me, kind of says something, because, like, who knows a person but more than their mom, you know?
Yeah. I hope it's not, too, because I also think, like, what if you just don't want to think the worst? You're hoping...
That's true. But the woman's never been identified, so they've never been able to prove if it was her or not. Later, in October of 2007, the following year, a pair of weathered blue jeans was found during a search of a remote wooded area about 7 miles from where Brianna went missing. The jeans were sent to be tested by the state forensic lab, but the results were never released. I feel like it's kind of unlikely that they were connected because they did extensive searches with dogs of the area. You would have thought they'd find it, especially 7 miles from when she went missing. Yeah. I feel like they would have searched a lot more, bigger area, but who knows. And just like with other cases we've covered, there's always someone that wants to cause more harm to the family. The family received several anonymous calls saying that Brianna had been tied to a tree in the woods and her body was disposed of at the bottom of a lake.
I do not understand people. Like, why?
I don't know. Are you that bored with your lives that you can't, like, you just want to cause further chaos in other people's lives?
Yeah, just why? I just don't understand. Like,
yeah, they got several calls with all these things saying that they disposed of Brianna and she was this and that, which we'll get into it again. In 2008, now 4 years after Brianna's gone missing, police conducted a review of the investigation and a special team was created solely dedicated to her case.
Dang, this is like a... Yeah.
Yeah. They re-interviewed people who had already been initially interviewed at the start of the investigation. They took a more aggressive approach to the case. In the following years, more searches were conducted with the use of search and rescue, canine units, the whole nine yards, but no new discoveries were made. In March of 2016, they made public the discovery of the DNA in Brianna's car.
Oh my gosh, that took them a long time.
Yeah. 12 years. But they did not release the test results. So they were just like, hey, by the way, we found DNA.
But you can't know who it was.
Maybe they're hoping the person would come forward.
I don't know.
I could just assume they were keeping it so they had something to test against. Mm-hmm. But later in July 2016, a fire burned down the barn where the car had been found. So if there was ever any evidence or anything still there, which probably not, it's 12 years later, but it was gone. So there are several theories floating around about what happened to Brianna, and we're going to cover a couple of them. The biggest and strongest theory that is floating around out there was that it was drug related. According to reports, the Montgomery area was very saturated, for lack of a better word, with drugs. According to some of Brianna's own friends, they had said that she had a history of experimenting with, quote, hard drugs, in specific, cocaine.
I just find, like, a lot of stuff hard to believe, especially because of all the people calling the house, like,
saying that she was buried somewhere, like, what can you believe after that? Like, you know, like,
yeah. I mean, I would, I don't know, her friends, but. Maybe. But people have theorized that she may have been killed over a drug debt and her body was disposed of.
If she was killed, why didn't they take the $200 she had in her car? Like,
maybe if it was drug related and it was a debt type thing.
Maybe they didn't care about the cash. They just wanted kind of punishment, I guess. I don't know.
So police, though, were not able to prove this theory. And her parents are firm that she was not seriously involved in the drug scene. Even though she allegedly, had friendships with both drug users and dealers.
Yeah, but there's people like that everywhere. Like,
sometimes you don't even know that
someone's a dealer.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, snap.
That's why I went so hard on the word allegedly. A week after her disappearance, a tip came into the police department that Brianna was being held in a house in Berkshire that was being used by drug dealers Ramon Ryans and Nathaniel Jackson. On April 15th of 2004, still the same year she went missing, Ryans was arrested on drug charges after the house was raided. During the raid, police found cocaine, marijuana, and drug paraphernalia, but there was no trace of Brianna. Later, still in 2004, another tip came in from an anonymous caller. The caller said that Ryans and Jackson had killed Brianna a week after she disappeared. Allegedly, Ryans and Brianna had argued over money that Brianna had lent him to buy cocaine. The caller said that her body was stored in a basement of another woman's home before they dismembered her with a table saw and disposed of her body at a pig farm. However, authorities were not able to confirm this theory.
That's oddly specific, like,
right?
Yes. Like,
so that was theory number one, and the strongest theory that you'll find circulating around Brianna. Another theory is that Brianna simply left of her own free will. She had mentioned to her friends wanting to go on a short trip out of town. They take this and her history of running away, and it's led people to believe that she simply decided to move and start a new life.
I don't know. This one's, like, less believable because she told her parents she was coming into, they knew where she was. She had dinner with her mom all the time, so.
And for me, like, she was talking to her mom about wanting to go to college.
Yeah.
Like, she, that day that she went missing, she took her GED test. Like, she hadn't even gotten her results if she had finished, if she had passed her GED test. Like, you're not doing that and trying to further yourself if you're planning to just take off and leave everything.
Something to start with. Those checks, the car, your ID.
Yeah, something, right? So for me, that's one of the less believable theories. Another theory is that Brianna was abducted by more than one person. Her parents believe that this might be the case, as they believe that one person alone would not be able to subdue her, as she had a background in martial arts training.
But she didn't fight Kelly.
I know.
Well, technically, martial arts, you're supposed to not, unless you know your life is in danger, which she did get a concussion that is life-threatening, but at the time, she probably just didn't feel the need to have to.
Yeah.
Like she said, you know, she still considered Kelly her friend. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So she had a background in martial arts, and her parents believed that one person alone would not be able to take her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she'd at least be able to get away.
Or cause enough disturbance to let it know that there was a struggle, or...
Well, maybe that's why you said they found, like, a cardigan, like, in the field. So maybe she did, like...
Maybe? Did you actually say cardigan, or are you just using fancy words?
No, she's using fancy words. I said sweater.
I really learned what a cardigan was the other day because it was on set. What the hell is a cardigan?
I thought it was like a pattern of something.
Really?
No. I thought she said cardigan. I could have sworn you said that.
I think I said jacket or sweater. Okay. One of the two. So anyways, the theory behind this of the two people abducting her is that completely alleged, there is no foundation of this, says that someone saw her became infatuated, kind of like a stalker, and hid in the backseat of her car where they attacked her after she left the Black Lantern Inn. Mm-hmm. Again, full speculation because there's nothing to indicate this.
I have a question. Did they interview
the boyfriend?
The boyfriend. Yeah. Not her boyfriend, but Kelly's boyfriend.
I don't know. There's not a ton on this case. There's a lot of information on the new stuff that's come about of the case, not a lot from the original start of the case. Okay. So I don't know who they interviewed. Okay. But with the fact that they did a whole task force just for her, mm-hmm. I would assume that they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they went and re-interviewed people from the very beginning. So another theory. We're on number 4 already. There's a lot of theories. So this theory was finally ruled out. And I feel like this theory is one of those ones that comes up on any unexplained case or person that goes missing. No.
Okay.
You'll know what I'm talking about, though, is that Brianna was a victim of Alaskan killer Israel Keyes. If you don't know who Israel Keyes is, go listen to Crime Junkies.
Yes.
If there is one serial killer case that I'm obsessed with, it is Israel Keyes.
Any missing person.
Any missing person. You can probably put it on Israel Keyes and it's probably going to match up.
I'm going to have to listen to that again.
But anyways, it was ruled out. In 2012, police investigated this as a possible connection as he had committed crimes in Vermont, New York, Washington, and Oregon in the surrounding states. This theory was eventually ruled out by the FBI as his financial records confirmed that he was elsewhere on the day that Brianna went missing.
I find it crazy that they can, like, see people's financial records, but they can't find them, like, or catch them.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, and of course, one of the last theories that's floating around out there that we already partly mentioned is
the connection to the Maura Murray case. I had a question about that. Can I see the photo of the car again?
Yes.
Because I'm still kind of confused on how it got stuck on the barn.
The only thing I can imagine is, like, the bumper got stuck.
Oh, I guess it does have, like, a
little... It has the, like, a cinder block foundation.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was going to say, because on the Murray case, her tailpipe was plugged.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, how can they rule it out completely if the both vehicles were tampered with in some way? But no, it seems more like a... accidental, like, getting away.
Before we continue on with recent developments, I want to mention a few things that have come from this case. They're good things for the most part. So in 2004, Brianna's parents created a website, which is no longer operational, where they posted a reward of $20,000 for information leading to her whereabouts. And as of 2017, the reward expired.
I feel like that's, like, a hard thing to do because you know how many people would lie for that kind of money.
Oh, yeah. So, well, that's why leading to her whereabouts, I physically have to find her in order to get the reward. So the one page that is still active is Brianna Maitland Facebook page. They do regularly update it, so if you guys want to go follow that. Brianna's case was also part of Project Jason's 18-Wheel Angel campaign, which used truck drivers and travelers to volunteer resources and time to help spread awareness about missing persons cases with the use of flyers. So since truckers cross state lines all the time, they would use them to help spread the word about these people.
That's cool.
Right? I didn't even know that was a thing.
I think there is. I know there's a couple different organizations and stuff that do that, but there are truck drivers part of it, like to find, like, whether they're drug traffickers, sex traffickers, or missing kids, things like that, and they have their own code on the CV and stuff, and it's pretty cool that they take their own initiative to do that.
Yeah, it's awesome, because honestly, how many cases have been solved unless there was that person that saw them and reported it and was keeping an eye out for these people, so
it's awesome.
The suspicious people.
Yes, the suspicious people.
So, every year, family and community members hold a vigil to renew awareness about the investigation. And Bruce, Brianna's father, created the Private Investigations for the Missing, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing private investigators for people that cannot afford them.
Her parents are like amazing.
So there is also an active GoFundMe page for this. So if you're interested in donating, we will have it linked on our website. If you're interested in donating to this organization. Now on to recent developments. As recently as September 2020, the Vermont State Police Major Crime Unit teamed up with Othram with the intention of generating a lead using DNA evidence recovered from the investigation. Othram's focus enables human identification from difficult evidence such as touch DNA, rootless hairs, and decades-old bone. And as Othram on their website puts it, quote, Othram achieves results even when other approaches fail, unquote. So they're trying everything. And a little bit of background on Othram. Othram was founded in 2018 and started the DNA Solves database. Othram uses genetic genealogy to take unknown DNA and connect it using familial relationships. Instead of being limited to matching DNA to suspects in custody or CODIS, because up until then they were like, unless a person got arrested and had to submit DNA, there's no way to compare. So although Othram does not have its own forensic labs, instead what happens is the crime labs can sequence and upload a DNA sample from a certain case, and then Othram will compare it to their database to see if there's any kind of familial matches. Now, if this is something that interests you, there are some ways to contribute, which I just want to mention. One, you can contribute DNA to the database. They accept uploads from most major DNA testing companies. So all you have to do is create an account, upload your data to DNA Solves, and once your data is uploaded, it will be compared to all of the unknown samples currently under investigation. So that is one thing when I was researching that's like, if you want to do it, awesome. If you don't want to do it, like, just be aware that if you submit this and it is a positive match to something, it's very possible that you could be like incriminating a family member. Yeah.
I heard something like that the other day though, about a case like that where they got their DNA tested and it ended up being their dad.
Oh, crap. Sounds like that'd be horrible.
Yeah, he was already dead, but I was like, yeah, that was horrible. Suck. Can you imagine your whole opinion on your dad changing?
Yeah, that'd be terrible. So just keep that in mind if you do decide to contribute DNA. The second way you can contribute is by subscribing to DNA Solves. You can choose to contribute anywhere from $5 to $100 or another amount if you want to donate more. You'd be charged once a month and can cancel anytime, and your contributions will be divided evenly between all unfunded cases. So these contributions are actually what covered the cost of testing Embriana's case. So none of the cost comes from the police department, the police doesn't pay for it, nothing. It is all public contribution. And I was looking through DNA Solves and stuff, they have all of the cases that are currently unfunded and are waiting. So, and it shows like how much they're still needing and everything. So it's a pretty cool website if you guys want to check it out. And if you'd like to know more, we will link DNA Solves on our website, as well as an article review of DNA Solves, which lists 5 things to know before using to learn a little bit more before you decide to jump into it. In recap, at the time of the disappearance, Brianna was 17 years old. This year, she would be 35. She had brown hair, hazel eyes. She was between 5'3 and 5'5. She weighed between 105 and 118 pounds.
It's like crazy because, you know, like that one sighting that they saw, like it's like she would be a whole different person now. Yeah. When she was 17, you wouldn't even recognize her.
Yeah, it's crazy.
At the time of her disappearance, she wore a small ring or stud in her left nostril. And she had a faint scar from her left eyebrow to her forehead. She wore contact lenses, but they were left behind in her car.
I was wondering if those were like spares or she was just happened to take him out. They were maybe irritating her, and she... I don't know.
I never carry a spare.
Yeah, but that's one thing that people found very suspicious, because she wore contact lenses. Like, why would she leave them behind?
Yeah, like...
I wonder how blind she was, because, like, I can see without my contacts fine. It's just, like...
Yeah.
Because, like, I was wondering, like, was she known to wear her glasses? Like...
No, she was known to wear her contacts. So
she needed them.
I would think so. So she went by either Bree or B. She was also on medication for migraine headaches, which was also left behind in her car.
Oh, dang.
She went missing from Montgomery, Vermont, but some reports will say that she disappeared from East Franklin or Sheldon. Currently, the Vermont State Police are offering a reward up to $5,000 for information leading to an arrest and conviction of those responsible or leading to a resolution of the case. Although they have interviewed hundreds of people, no suspect has been identified, and the case remains active as an endangered missing persons case. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Brianna Alexandria Maitland, please contact Vermont State Police at 802-524-5993 or the official tip line at 802-241-5355. You can also submit an anonymous tip by texting the keywords VTIPS, which is Victor Tango India Papa Sierra, to CRIMES, which is 274-637. Any comments?
I think I got mine all out.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Somebody had to have seen something or know something. At cases like this that people just vanish, it
just baffles me. Like,
so the thing that gets me is that they said her shift ended at 11:20. You know that it takes a while after your shift, right, to like finish up. By the time you get out of there, you're not actually get out of there at 11:20.
Well, some people just
Some people
just leave, but sometimes you have side work to get done. But you know, who knows if that's within her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but all her coworkers saw her leaving the parking lot. The first person that came forward saying they remember the car was between 11:30 and 12.
Oh dang! So that
which
a
is
small gap.
10 minutes from the last time she was seen in the parking lot.
Well, they could have probably seen her car, like, and they were in that barn or something talking.
Well, and then, too, like, how did you say how far the barn was from the Black Lantern? Because, like, then that, too, would also be like, is that guy?
That would have been like a fighting. Yeah.
But it's like insane to me, because if that's true, that's a 10-minute window. And if that person would have stopped, would it have changed the case?
Maybe they were trying to think, like, 11:30-ish, like, you know, like, because when I'm driving, I, like, if I see something odd, I'll be like, oh, dang, it's late. Like, I don't really look at the time, though. Like,
I look right at the clock to see if I see anything weird. Like, somebody parked, like, at the park.
Me too. Like, well, my clocks are all, like, wrong, so I'd get everything wrong.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just feel like it's a super tight window, and even the second person was between 12 and 12:30. So even then, say they didn't see her until 12, that's still a 40-minute window. Like,
there's not one suspicious thing they could have seen. Yeah, I get what you mean.
Like, one guy said, oh yeah, the headlights could have been on. The other guy said, yeah, the blinker was on. Like, no suspicion. Like, you guys, that didn't raise any alerts for you.
Yeah, usually a blinker is like a hazard. Like,
also driving in the middle of the night, you're alone. Gonna stop in the middle of the road for someone, especially nowadays. It's like people like
nowadays, but this was back in 2004 when people still did that in a small town in Vermont. I don't know, I just think it's kind of crazy. But
yeah, and up until now, she's still missing. I just think it's crazy that she'd be 35 this year. Like,
yeah, it's just.
And one of the things that I didn't mention, but like something that always pops into my head with these kind of cases, is sex trafficking. That's like the one thing that I'm always like,
was she a victim of sex trafficking? Like, is she still a victim of sex trafficking, or is she too old now and they disposed of her because they want some money?
I always think of things like that. That's why, like,
I'm always thinking, I hope I don't get kidnapped and turned into a prostitute or something. Like,
not
no offense to no one that's like not professional, but it's like,
I think they'd kill me. I'd fight. So
yeah,
just
but
like
I think of cases where they like drug you up so much that you don't even like know. It's just like
a scary thing to imagine.
Yeah.
Very scary.
All right. Well, it's last call, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Again, don't forget to drop your answer for this week's drink. Remember, it is a play on words. So let's see who figures it out. Remember to stay suspicious.
Stay strong.
Stay savvy.
Good night.